Hey guys, thanks for checking out the Access Point podcast. Whether you stumbled upon us for the first time or you're a longtime listener, we thank you for coming and listening, and we hope you enjoy. This week, we're going back over 400 years further back into the historical timeline. In fact, this, what we're going to see today, is the beginning point of Israel, of the Jews being in Egypt. We understand that that present soon turned into 430 so years of slavery under Pharaoh. When Pharaoh began to see this population growing, he feared that one day, if these Israelites really put their heads together and realize they outnumber us, there may be a revolt. They may turn against us and overthrow us. So gradually and stealthily, he forced them into slavery. But too much of the history won't get too far. We want to go back to the story of Joseph. It's a popular story. It's a story maybe you've heard, the coat of many colors and various other aspects of his story. So today, we will dive in and read a few portions of scripture out of Genesis, but it's more right now a story time with AJ, if you will, if you want to bear with me, because there's so much content. There's so much about the story of Joseph that I want to give the context so that we understand the very end, which is the forgiveness that was overwhelming and flowing out of his life. So let's jump into this story. The story of Joseph begins in Genesis chapter 37. And Joseph at this time is 17 years old. He was at this time the youngest, but the second youngest of 12 brothers born to Jacob. And Jacob is, you know, also known as Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. That's where we get, of course, later on throughout Israel's history, the 12 tribes are through his 12 sons, the sons of Jacob, later known as Israel. But out of, again, these first 11 sons, Joseph was his father's favorite. In fact, Genesis 37 verses 3 through 4 says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons." And already you're like, man, on Father's Day, there's a lesson here about favoritism and the problems that come along with that. But it goes on, because he had been born to him in his old age, and made an ornate robe for him, as you know, the coat of many colors. When his brothers saw that his father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. So already we see a building animosity between Joseph and his other brothers. So we see jealousy building in this relationship. And that was already, you know, striking a nerve. But then Joseph, maybe being young and dumb, not really thinking through what he wanted to say, he begins to tell his family about two dreams that he had. The first dream showed his brothers bowing down to him. And instead of keeping this to himself, like, man, that's a really strange dream, kind of cool, my brothers who I look up to because they're older, they all bow down to me in my dream, he decides, you know what, I want to, maybe there's a little bit of bragging going on, we don't know, but he decides to share his dream with everyone. And that was already, again, adding to the jealousy, just fueling the fire. Then later, he basically dumps the 5-gallon jug of diesel on the fire. This time, he tells everyone about his second dream, where he says, "In this dream, the whole family, all of you bowed down before me. How cool is that?" And that didn't go over so well. His brothers, already jealous, now become furious at Joseph, like, man, if I just can get my hands on that youngin', you know, because already there's favoritism. And now there's these outlandish dreams working together. They say, we've got to get rid of this kid. Yes, he might be my half-brother, but I don't want anything to do. I don't want him around talking about more dreams. I don't want to see Dad giving him more outlandish gifts. I don't want to see him ever again. So we need to get rid of him. And the time came. One day, Israel, Jacob, sent Joseph to check on his brothers while they were watching their sheep. That's when they saw him approaching. They saw him in the distance. And they're like, man, now finally our time has come. They started to plot against him. The brothers right out first, like, hey, let's kill him. Let's take him out. And we'll throw his body in a pit. We'll go tell Dad that, oh, poor Joseph was eaten by wild animals and killed. Fortunately, he had an advocate, Reuben, who was the oldest brother. He objected to outright murder. He was cool with hurting him, but he's like, look, we can't kill him. He is our half-brother. So he suggested they throw Joseph into the cistern. So that part is still true. He said, I know y'all wanted to kill him, then throw his dead body in, but let's keep him alive and throw him in the pit and then, you know, see what happens there. But the truth is, he, being a good older brother, planned to come back and rescue Joseph. But when Reuben slips away after they put Joseph in the cistern, some merchants come passing by, and Judah, one of the other brothers, suggests, hey, look, there won't be any blood on our hands if we sell him off into slavery. We get some money in our pockets. We don't have to hear about his dreams. We don't have to see Dad loving him more than he does us. We don't have to deal with any favoritism. And we don't have to ever think about him ever again. We don't have to kill him. Let's sell him off. So instead of murdering him, as if that's any better, they sold him into slavery. They did this, unfortunately, again, before Reuben could come back to secretly rescue Joseph. And then after selling him, they took part of the first plan again, took Joseph's pretty robe, which everyone knew, especially his father knew, I gave Joseph this robe. This is his special robe. They dipped the robe into some goat's blood in order to deceive their father, to once again going back to plan A. So it's a blending of the initial plan just without outright murder. So they threw him in the well, the cistern, like they wanted to, but instead of killing him, they sold him into slavery, but still deceived their father so that, look, he'll grieve and mourn a little while, then he'll get over it, and we'll all be better off because we don't have to hear any more dreams, any more mess. So we'll tell him, look, poor Joseph was killed by a wild beast. And, you know, you could even hear some say, look, if you hadn't sent him out to check on us, none of this would have ever happened, Dad. I'm sorry, but that's what happened. So this is the beginning, already quite a treacherous tale for poor Joseph, a 17-year-old teenager. So now Joseph sold off and then sold again from these merchants to a high-ranking Egyptian named Potiphar, maybe a name you're familiar with if you've heard the story. But what's already standing out that we see in the story is that God is with him in the cistern. God is with him with the merchants. And God is with him in the household of Potiphar. In fact, God continued to bless Joseph because Joseph's faith was intact. Joseph continued to worship and trust in God. In fact, he soon became supervisor of Potiphar's household. In fact, Genesis 39, we read how Joseph excelled in all of his duties, became one of Potiphar's most trusted servant. And he was now pretty much second in command. He was in charge of the entire household. Potiphar knew, if I leave Joseph here, everything's going to be the same, if not better, when I come back. I trust everything to Joseph. And the reason being is because Potiphar could see that Joseph's God blessed him. God looked favorably on him. And because of that, he prospered in everything he did. Part of that, yes, was his faith. But another part, you can imagine and picture the reality that Joseph was a hardworking young man. And Potiphar recognized that and blessed Joseph because of that, because he saw the blessings of God and wanted that. Say, well, if God, his God of Israel, is blessing him, and if I bless Joseph, Joseph's going to bless, you know, everything he touches in my house. So it's a win-win for everyone. But unfortunately, as we've seen with the story of Joseph, it itself had its valleys and peaks, its ups and downs, because apparently Joseph was a handsome young man. And Potiphar's wife saw that, realized, this is a good-looking young man that my husband just happened to bring into the house and to trust with anything. So, of course, Potiphar won't mind. Potiphar, my husband, will trust me and trust Joseph with any relations we may have. And so with that and that attraction, she attempts time and time again to sleep, to seduce poor little Joseph. Multiple times we see time and time again. And every time Joseph refuses to betray Potiphar, but his wife continues to get mad, continues to get jealous. But Joseph is consistently refusing her advances, showing honor not just to his master, but for his God as well, saying, this would be a wicked act against my God, a sin against my God, a wicked act against my master, your husband. Kind of like a reminder, like, you are a married woman. This is not good for anyone. This is not an ideal situation. Your husband has trusted me with this household, and that means hands off to you, and I'm following through on that. But she's persistent. I'll give her that. One day, in fact, she catches Joseph by the hem of his cloak, making these sexual advances once again, and Joseph fled butt naked, leaving his cloak in her hands. And now seeing the situation, well, he's running around naked. Nobody's going to believe. He's just a servant anyway. Yeah, he might be trusted in the household, might be trusted by my husband. But when I tell this outlandish tale and show his cloak, then who's going to believe him? So she falsely accused Joseph of attempted rape. And Potiphar, believing his wife, like, man, I trusted you with everything, Joseph, and then you go and do such a horrible defilement of my household and my wife. And so after, again, being caught naked, running from the house, there's really no defense there. There's no way he'd be like, look, she ripped it off, man. I don't know what to tell you. Nobody's going to believe you, man. You know, so he runs out naked, is accused of attempted rape, and is thrown into jail. Potiphar maybe did not like the idea of putting his most trusted servant in prison, but, dude, nobody does that in my house to my wife, so you know where you belong now. But with the ups and downs of Joseph's life, we see Joseph was once again blessed by God, even though he was locked up. Because despite being in prison, Joseph continues to honor God with his hearts and with his actions. And he doesn't just respond as, maybe again, preach to myself, with bitterness and, you know, working with God. How time and time again, when I think life's going good, this happens. You know, why do you allow these things to happen? Instead of bitterness towards God, he continues to work with integrity, continues to serve God and to honor God in the way that he lives. That's why while in prison, when one of the cupbearers and the baker who also worked for Pharaoh and with Potiphar, they find themselves locked up. And while there, they had some troubling dreams. And thanks be to Joseph and God's gift with him, he's able to interpret their dreams for them perfectly. The cupbearer soon is given release from prison, and he says, look, because of what you've done for me, because of your amazing integrity, because you're obviously a man of God, I promise when I'm out, I'm gonna make sure I get you out also. So again, things are starting to go back up. Things are turning around. But once out, the cupbearer's like, Joseph, who's Joseph? I don't know who you're talking about. He completely forgets about poor old Joseph locked up, you know, as an innocent man, albeit locked up, forgets all about him because he's back, you know, with Pharaoh, back with Potiphar, back with all the officials, and he's now on top. And so lowly Joseph on the bottom, you know, I don't even know who you're talking about, forgets all about him. So Joseph continues to wait in prison till finally 2 years later, the Pharaoh himself has a troubling dream. No one in the kingdom, in his household, can interpret the dream for him. The cupbearer finally like, you know what? Somebody interpreted my dream, a weird dream I had one day. Finally remembers Joseph. You know, why it took 2 years, we don't know. But because of that, he says, Pharaoh, a guy interpreted a dream perfectly for me. I bet he could do the same for you. So Pharaoh calls on Joseph, who once again interprets the dream with wisdom and interprets it perfectly with the gift that God had given him in that moment. And what he tells Pharaoh, based on this dream, Joseph is saying there will be 7 years of bountiful harvest. But after those 7 years, it's going to be followed with 7 years of severe famine in Egypt and in the surrounding areas. And so with that wisdom, at the understanding of the dream, he advised the king, look, begin storing grain in preparation for the upcoming years, for the years of shortage and famine. And because of this wisdom, Joseph was now once again back on top, made ruler in Egypt, now only second to Pharaoh, second to the king. Joseph is finally freed from prison at age 30. This is 13 years after he was sold by his brothers as a slave. And so now, finally, he's back where, you know, he thinks he should be, not because of who he is, but because of that work ethic and because I've continued to serve God, and now God is continuing to bless me and my efforts, even with the peaks and valleys that he's dealt with. He's never turned his back on God or lost trust in God. And so because of his wisdom, he was put in charge of storing up and properly allocating food during the years of plenty and then selling it to the Egyptians and foreigners during the years of famine. In fact, Joseph will lead the way in preparing for those 7 years that he foretold through the dream of Pharaoh with those horrible years of famine. And in fact, he does an amazing job, because when the famine finally hits Egypt, they're well stocked. They're prepared with enough food, not just to survive themselves, but now they're able to sell and provide to non-Egyptians who need help. So because of Joseph, not only was Egypt saved from famine, but the surrounding communities and areas and villages were now able to run to Egypt as a source of food so that they can survive that 7-year drought and famine. Because when this famine hit, Canaan was also affected. And this is when Joseph's brothers finally returned to the story. They're obviously starving. The famine's hit hard all around. And so their father, Jacob, sends 10 of his sons to Egypt to buy grain, to just make ends meet, to be able to continue to survive as a family. He kept Benjamin, which was actually Joseph's whole brother, that same father, same mother. He was now the youngest of the 12, and the only other son of Rachel. He leaves him behind. Now he's kind of in that favored position because Rachel was the beloved wife of Israel. She was, in fact, his favorite, if you will. It's kind of weird to say a favorite wife. You know, you guys don't get any ideas on this Father's Day. But Rachel was his beloved wife, so Joseph and Benjamin were favored sons. He leaves Benjamin behind. This is when Joseph sees his brothers, and he recognizes him instantly. But unsurprisingly, you know, not thinking anything else of Joseph over the past several years, they wouldn't think he'd be some great Egyptian ruler, so they didn't recognize him. They may say he has some similar features, but again, he's a grown man now. He's no longer the 17-year-old boy that they helped sell into slavery. In fact, now Joseph is 40 years old and practically a king. It's been 23 years since they sent him away, so they had no idea. Even if they thought he looked familiar, they wouldn't think, that's my brother. So again, they had no idea who this man was. But maybe being a little sneaky, maybe wanting to truly test how much his brothers have changed in the past 23 years, he tested them. And he did so by accusing them of being spies. Oh, you come to Egypt to gain intel. That's the only reason you're here. You don't want our grain. You don't want to buy anything. You just want to gain intel. And with that accusation, he was able to confine them all for 3 days. And then after 3 days, he decided to release all but one of them, sending the rest of the household with grain to carry back to their father, to the rest of the family, and then saying, when you come back for your brother, you better bring back your youngest brother. Better bring back Benjamin, Joseph's full brother. Again, still unaware of Joseph's identity, the brothers were already begin to say, is this our punishment from 23 years ago? Is it finally caught up to us? They were afflicted with guilt. Maybe they hadn't thought about Joseph for 23 years, but now the guilt's kicking in. Is this what we get? We're not spies, but we're being accused of being spies in Egypt, in this powerful nation, and we were held as prisoners for 3 days, and now our brother Simeon is retained, and we've got to come back. And not only that, but we've got to bring back our father's youngest son, Benjamin, and he's not going to go for that. But the only way we get Simeon back is to all come back with Benjamin. So they begin to think, man, is finally catching up to us. We are having to now pay for our sins against our brother and sins against our God. But what they didn't know, Joseph overheard their discussions. And in fact, in this moment, he was able to keep it together, but he went aside privately to weep, just overwhelmed. He's starting to see that maybe there's an inkling of change and maybe even a sense of sorrow and regret for what they did. So with that time, he sends them away again, Simeon being held back with them. But he sends them, in fact, secretly returning the money that they gave for their grain. And when the brothers realized that the money had been returned, the fear amped up even more. Like, what if we were released from jail, our brothers held back, we had to come back with Benjamin, and now they're going to accuse us of stealing and blaming each other. Did you put it back? Did you not pay them? You know, everybody's trying to figure out what in the world is going on. We paid for this grain, but all our money is here with the grain to feed our family. So the fear is really amping up. And so you know they regretted having to come talk to Jacob. But once home, they told Jacob all that had transpired. Once again, reminding Jacob of the loss of 23 years ago of his favorite son, Joseph. And now he's lost another son, Simeon, possibly never going to get him back. Because he says, look, I will not send Benjamin despite all of your problems. In fact, Reuben, again, the oldest, says, look, if I don't return, you can kill your two grandsons, my two sons. How crazy of a guarantee is that? It's not like you say, hey, you can kill me, but look, my sons are collateral. If we don't bring back all of your sons, including Benjamin and Simeon, you can kill your two grandsons. That is an insane offer, right? But that is a seriousness in which Reuben is saying, we have to go back to Egypt. But eventually, with time, the famine became so severe and the little bit of grain that they were able to purchase a few times was gone. Joseph or Jacob, he acquiesced. You know, unwittingly, unknowingly, what would transpire later, just regrettably said, you have to do it. I have to get my son Simeon back, but please do not let anything happen to Benjamin. So Jacob sends Benjamin with them, giving, in fact, we see that Judah, another brother, doesn't this time give his sons as collateral, but gives his own life, pledging his own life as collateral. And Jacob agreed to those terms. He sends all the choice fruits and double the money. Like, look, I don't know what happened last time you guys were supposed to pay, but you came back with the same amount of money and grain. Something's not right. So now we're sending double to try to make up for whichever one of you made this mistake, because I know it's one of you. It doesn't just reappear back in our bags with the grain. So now they make their way back to Egypt. And when Joseph saw the men, he instructed his servants to slaughter an animal and to prepare a special meal for the brothers to dine with him. But now again, afraid at this invitation to Joseph's house, the brothers made apologies to Joseph's steward for the money. He said, look, none of us took this back. It's been replaced. I don't know how, but I promise you, you know how outlandish that claim would be. It just reappeared. I don't know where the money came from, how dumb that would sound. But believe it or not, Joseph's steward reassured them, look, don't worry about it. And that's when they bring Simeon out. He survived. He's doing well. And when Joseph returned, the brothers bowed to him. You remember the dream? That fulfilled the earlier prophecy, the earlier dream. His brothers standing before him, bowing to Joseph. Not so funny anymore, is it? This is being played out right before their eyes, but not yet knowing who they just bowed to. And then he asked about, in a strange manner, asked about their family's welfare. And being overwhelmed, he snuck off to the side, removing himself to his chamber, and again wept over being reunited with his brothers. But then coming back in, when the men sat down for the meal, they were at a separate table from Joseph, and they were amazed that they were arranged by birth order. And then on top of that, they realized Benjamin, the youngest, he's given five times the portion that the rest of it. And the other brother's like, wait a second, Benjamin, you're not that big of a guy. You're the youngest, but you've got five times the portion, the food that we have. But what we see is, again, Joseph's already beginning to open up and bless his brothers best way he can. And before sending them back to their father once again, Joseph, again, maybe being a trickster, maybe just wanting to test them, he, in fact, returns their money to their grain sacks, and then he places his silver cup in Benjamin's bag. So already, he's already setting the stage for that final appearance with his brothers before he reveals himself. He let the brothers start out on the journey and then sent his steward after them to feign anger and to threaten to kill Benjamin because, look, obviously this cup didn't just appear in Benjamin's bag. Benjamin's a thief. You all have to come back and possibly have to pay for what your brother has done. And back now in Joseph's presence, Judah, remember, he realizes, if I don't have Benjamin when I come back, my life is done. I've already pledged my life in the placement of Benjamin's life. And he says, look, if Benjamin doesn't come back to my father, then I'm a dead man. I promised, I pledged my life to my father so that it was a sense of collateral to maintain the protection of my youngest brother. And Joseph's beginning to see that there's truly a bond and love. There's no sense of jealousy and anger between the brothers. And he told now, Judah's telling Joseph of the grief of the loss of Joseph, not knowing that that's the very one he's talking to. And then he's saying, look, he already lost his favorite son, Joseph, 23 years ago. Now he could not bear to lose Benjamin, Joseph's brother. And Judah again spoke of the pledge of offering his own life for Benjamin's life if Benjamin didn't come back. And with seeing this proof of his brother's change of heart, Joseph sent all of his servants away and he wept openly and loudly enough to be heard by all of Pharaoh's household and began to realize something's going on with Joseph. And that's when he revealed himself to his brothers. And that's when we'll jump into Genesis chapter 45. It says, then Joseph said to his brothers, please come near me. And they came near. I am Joseph, your brother, he said, the one you sold into Egypt. And now don't be grieved or angry with yourselves for selling me here, because God sent me ahead of you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there will be 5 more years without plowing or harvesting. God sent me ahead of you to establish you as a remnant within the land and to keep you alive by great deliverance. Therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all of the land of Egypt. Man, what a powerful moment in this story. And what's even more powerful is the forgiveness that Joseph displays. Because Joseph immediately reassures his brothers, telling them, look, don't beat yourselves up. Don't be angry with yourselves for what you've done. Yes, that was a stupid act. That was out of vengeance, anger, jealousy. It was things that got the best of you. But what I want you to see is God used that horrible moment in my life, that horrible decision you made, in order to bring me to Egypt, to set the stage for the 7 years of plenty and now the 7 years of famine, so that not only will Egypt be preserved, but your lives now and the lives of the surrounding villages and communities will be preserved because of the wisdom that God has given me. Joseph reaffirmed again later on his forgiveness after the death of his father, saying that although his brothers intended evil to him, God had intended it for good. Joseph sent his brothers now back to Jacob with this amazing news. And he, in fact, retrieves the rest of his household to come to live in Goshen, to be near Joseph, so that he can provide for them for this time of famine that still lied ahead for them. So Jacob, their father, did come live in Egypt with all of his family. Again, this is the beginning of really the true presence of Israel and the Israelites in Egypt at this time. And before he died, Jacob blessed Joseph's 2 sons and gave thanks to God for his overwhelming goodness, saying, I never expected to see your face again, and now God has allowed me to see your children too. Overwhelmed of God's hand, God's sovereign hand at work throughout these many years. And looking at the story, we realize, yes, Joseph, he could have used his power to bring the hammer of vengeance down on his brothers. He could have sent every one of his brothers to death or you know, in a good old-fashioned turn of events, into slavery themselves. But instead, he chose mercy and grace. He forgave them. He embraced them. And he fed them. He treated them as the brothers they were, not as enemies, not as somebody who's done a horrible act, even though that's what they did. He truly opened up the floodgates of forgiveness in their lives. And because of that, he brought his whole family to be closer to him, to finally be reunited with his dead once again before his father passed. And so there's much that you and I can learn from this story. You know, we see it in many instances throughout the story as a whole. But right out the gate, we see as parents, we have warning concerning that favoritism that Jacob had and the effects that it can have on our children as well. And then we see, you know, the sense of Joseph's youthful pride and the envy and hatred that led because of that jealousy and because of that favoritism. Then we also have a good example of how to handle sexual temptation, like Joseph did. Run. It's the only way truly to avoid those moments that we are so often so weak at. Then we have a clear picture of God's faithfulness, showing us that he doesn't forsake his children, even in the midst of suffering, even in those valley moments, as dark as they may seem. God was with Joseph, even in prison, in slavery, in the cistern, even with the upcoming famine. God was with him. His sovereign hand was at work, and the same is true for you and I when we put our trust and our faith in him, truly living under his will and his direction. So we see the themes of forgiveness. We see the father-son bond. We see sibling rivalry, brotherly love, God's sovereignty, and God's greater good in times of suffering. Just like Joseph, we are called to forgive those who have offended us and to see life's experience as part of God's plan to help us serve others. Joseph's story is also presents amazing insight into how that sovereign hand of God works to overcome evil and to bring about his plan. We often say, God, why does all this happen? Why has this happened to me? Joseph never cried out blaming God. Joseph never cried out saying, God, you have totally forsaken me. Now I'm turning my back on you. He continued to serve and was blessed because he trusted that sovereign hand at work, even when he was sold into slavery, even when he was falsely accused, even when, as an innocent man, he was put in jail. He trusted in God, knew that God was sovereign. God was in control, and God can overcome any evil in this world to bring about his ultimate plan of redemption. And so after all of his ordeals, Joseph was able to see God's hand at work in everything, because he teaches man's most wicked intentions can never thwart the perfect plan of God, because God orchestrates all things, even calamity, for his glory and our good. Joseph sees that all that had happened to him, from being now a slave to going to prison to now his rise of power under Pharaoh, as a part of God's plan, God's story. The story of Joseph reminds you and I, reminds me, that the trials, as much as we want them to be over in this present moment, they may not be finished. The story of Joseph reminds us that even if the trials aren't over, we will be okay by trusting in God. Because the good news is, just as God was with Joseph during his darkest valley moments, as slave, as prisoner, God was with him, and God will be with you and I in our darkest moments. When this world throws evil at us, God's plan can still be at work through those darkest times. But because of the world we live in, we often hear, and you hear me kind of talk bad about this prosperity gospel, it's that increasingly popular belief that those who love God, if you think positive, work hard, you'll receive material wealth, success, the trials will be no more if you continue to pursue the gospel of Christ, continue to pursue God's will. But the story of Joseph stands in stark opposition to this message. Joseph did everything right, and he still spent 13 years as a slave or as a prisoner. And now, while many today would say that they don't believe the prosperity gospel, very few of us would stomach the idea of suffering for 13 years. we're uncomfortable with the idea of suffering at all. But we often like to think that, you know, we can handle it for a few days, maybe even a couple months. Surely God wouldn't continue to push us through the struggles longer than that, right? But again, Joseph, though he pursued God, trusting God as a prisoner and as a slave, was in that for 13 years. So we have to remember, in those valley moments, it is, yes, hard to keep the faith and the patience that Joseph had. But it's with that clear understanding of faith and God's sovereignty that Joseph was able to show mercy and to offer forgiveness to his brothers, because he had a clear understanding of God's work in his life. So Joseph teaches us that forgiveness isn't just a single act. It's not just a couple of words, but an act of choice to overcome past indecencies with a conscious forgetfulness. It's not that we can forgive and forget, although many people want to push that, because we do remember things that happened to us. It's hard to forget the worst moments of our lives. You know, but what we see with Joseph is he chooses forgetfulness as an ingredient into forgiving his brothers for their treachery. Of course, again, it's impossible to truly forget those most egregious of sins against us. But as much as we can't delete the events from our memory, we can choose to no longer hold those responsible by letting it go and allowing that forgiveness to flow from us. Because we are called to forgive each other as Christ, God, has forgiven us. So we can't allow a root of bitterness to spring up in our hearts. We see that in Hebrews 12:15. And just like with God, he does not condemn us for our sins. We see that in Romans 8:1. So in that sense, there is an understanding that God forgives and forgets. But God can never forget. He is all-knowing. But we too, in that same frame of mind, that same theme, like Joseph, should choose not to condemn or hold sins over those who have done us wrong. That is, in a sense, the forgetting part. We are forgetting that condemnation that, yes, they may deserve. We're forgetting what we want to do in vengeance or retaliation. God has chosen to no longer condemn us because we are clothed in Christ's righteousness. He has forgiven us. So you and I, as believers, should also follow that same suit of no longer holding those sins against those who have done us wrong, but choose to forgive day in and day out. We do so by allowing the peace of forgiveness to flow through our homes and our families, so that we no longer stay stuck in the bitterness of resentment, but rather we see that God's sovereign hand is ultimately in control of everything. So we should surrender that control and find peace in Him alone. Holding on to resentment, holding on to previous sins committed against us, only hinders that peace. But choosing to no longer condemn those who have done us wrong, as Christ has chosen to do for us because of His sacrifice, choosing to forgive us, choosing to clothe us in His righteousness, is the example that you and I should follow in forgiving others. Does it mean it's going to be easy? No. Because again, it's not a one word, I forgive you. It's not a, you know, sentence of words, but it's a continued act of no longer holding it against that individual. And your forgiveness is not dependent on them seeking forgiveness from you. They can remain rooted in bitterness all they want, but you and I choose to let it go so that we can find the peace that only Christ offers. That's what true forgiveness gives. Gives us peace, gives us joy that surpasses this world's understanding. But the only way we can do so is by allowing that forgiveness to flow, no longer holding it against those around us. And like Joseph, seeing, yes, bad things happen, but God's sovereign hand is in control and can still bring good out of my darkest moments. Let's pray. Hey guys, it's AJ Layton, lead pastor at Access Point Church. We're so glad you guys have found us, stumbled upon us, or been long listeners. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our page, share with your friends. We look forward to seeing you next week.